The stairs are akin to what I saw in the hallway. They are broad and expansive, like the steps leading up to a temple or palace. Except these go down into darkness. They are large, likely cut from stone and then lined with steel. They are tall, meant for a determined stride. As I walk, I wonder what secrets the Inquisitors deemed worthy of hiding below the earth, in the basement of their stronghold. This entire building is a secret. What did they do here, in these massive hallways and open, empty rooms? The stairwell ends in another large, square room. I've noticed something. There are no doors in the doorways here. Each room is open, visible to those outside. As I walk, peeking into the rooms beneath the earth, I find cavernous chambers with few furnishings. No libraries, no lounges. Several contain large metal blocks that could be altars. There is something different here in this last room at the back of the main landing. I'm not certain what to make of it. A torture chamber, perhaps? There are tables, metal tables, set into the floor. They are bloody, though there are no corpses. Blood flakes and powders at my feet. A lot of men have died in this room, I think. There don't appear to be torture implements beyond spikes, like the ones in Inquisitor eyes. Massive, heavy things, like the spikes one might pound into the ground with a very large mallet. Some are tipped with blood, though I don't think I'll handle those. These other ones, yes, they look indistinguishable from the ones in Marsh's eyes. Yet some are of different metals. Sazed set the spike down on a table, metal clinking against metal. He shivered, scanning the room again. A place to make new Inquisitors, perhaps? He had a sudden horrific vision of the creatures, once only several dozen in number, having swelled their ranks during their months sequestered in the conventicle. But that didn't seem right. They were a secretive, exclusive bunch. Where would they have found enough men worthy of joining their ranks? Why not make Inquisitors from the servants above, rather than just killing them? Sazed had always suspected that a man had to be an Allomancer to be changed into an Inquisitor. Marsh's own experience substantiated that premise. Marsh had been a Seeker, a man who could burn bronze before his transformation. Sazed looked again at the blood, the spikes, and the tables, and decided he wasn't certain that he wanted to know how one made a new Inquisitor. Sazed was about to leave the room when his lamp revealed something at the back. Another doorway. He moved forward, trying to ignore the dried blood at his feet, and entered a chamber that didn't seem to match the rest of the conventicle's daunting architecture. It was cut directly into the stone, and it twisted down into a very small stairwell. Curious, Sazed walked down the set of worn stone steps. For the first time since entering the building, he felt cramped, and he had to stoop as he reached the bottom of the stairwell and entered a small chamber. He stood up straight and held up his lamp to reveal a wall. The room ended abruptly, and his light sparkled off the wall. It held a steel plate like those above. This one was a good 5 feet across and nearly as tall. And it bore writing. Suddenly interested, Sazed set down his pack and stepped forward, raising his lamp to read the top words on the wall. The text was in Terrace. It was an old dialect, certainly, but one that Sazed could make out even without his language coppermind. His hand trembled as he read the words. "I write these words in steel, for anything not set in metal cannot be trusted. I have begun to wonder if I am the only sane man remaining. Can the others not see? They have been waiting so long for their hero to come, the one spoken of in Terrace prophecies, that they quickly jump between conclusions, presuming that each story and legend applies to this one man. My brethren ignore the other facts. They cannot connect the other strange things that are happening. They are deaf to my objections and blind to my discoveries. Perhaps they are right. Perhaps I am mad or jealous or simply daft. My name is Quan, philosopher, scholar, traitor. I am the one who discovered Alendi, and I am the one who first proclaimed him to be the hero of ages. I am the one who started this all, and I am the one who betrayed him, for I now know that he must never be allowed to complete his quest.
Sazed!
Sazed jumped, nearly dropping the lamp. Marsh stood in the doorway behind him, imperious, discomforting, and so dark. He fit this place with its lines and hardness.
The upstairs quarters are empty, Marsh said. This trip has been a waste. My brethren took anything of use to them.
Not a waste, Marsh, Sazed said, turning back to the plate of text. He hadn't read all of it. He hadn't even gotten close. The script was written in a tight, cramped hand, its etchings coating the wall. The steel had preserved the words despite their obvious age. Sazed's heart beat a little faster. This was a fragment of text from before the Lord Ruler's reign, a fragment written by a terrace philosopher, a holy man. Despite 10 centuries of searching, the Keepers had never fulfilled the original goal of their creation. They had never discovered their own terrace religion. The Lord Ruler had squelched terrace religious teachings soon after his rise to power. His persecution of the terrace people, his own people, had been the most complete of his long reign, and the Keepers had never found more than vague fragments regarding what their own people had once believed.
"I have to copy this down, Marsh," Sazed said, reaching for his pack.
Taking a visual memory wouldn't work. No man could stare at a wall of so much text, then remember the words. He could perhaps read them into his copper mind. However, he wanted a physical record, one that perfectly preserved the structure of lines and punctuation. Marsh shook his head.
"We will not stay here. I do not think we should even have come."
Sazed paused, looking up. Then he pulled several large sheets of paper from his pack.
"Very well, then," he said. "I'll take a rubbing. That will be better anyway, I think. It will let me see the text exactly as it was written."
Marsh nodded, and Sazed got out his charcoal.
"This discovery," he thought with excitement, "this will be like Rashik's logbook. We are getting close."
However, even as he began the rubbing, his hands moving carefully and precisely, another thought occurred to him. With a text like this in his possession, his sense of duty would no longer let him wander the villages. He had to return to the north to share what he had found, lest he die and this text be lost. He had to go to Terrace. Or to Luthadel. From there he could send messages north. He had a valid excuse to get back to the center of action, to see the other crew members again. Why did that make him feel even more guilty?
"When I finally had the realization, finally connected all of the signs of the anticipation to Alendi, I was so excited. Yet when I announced my discovery to the other world-bringers, I was met with scorn. Oh, how I wished that I had listened to them."
13. Mist swirled and spun like monochrome paintings running together on a canvas. Light died in the west, and night came of age. Vin frowned.
"Does it seem like the mists are coming earlier?"
"Earlier?" Orsir asked in his muffled voice.
The Chondra Wolfhound sat next to her on the rooftop. Vin nodded.
"Before, the mists didn't start to appear until after it grew dark, right?"
It is dark, mistress.
But they're already here. They started together when the sun was barely beginning to set.
I don't see that it matters, mistress. Perhaps the mists are simply like other weather patterns. They vary sometimes.
Doesn't it even seem a little strange to you?
I will think it strange if you wish me to, mistress, Orsir said.
That isn't what I meant.
I apologize, mistress, Orsir said. Tell me what you do mean, and I will be certain to believe as commanded.
Vin sighed, rubbing her brow.
I wish Sazed were back, she thought.
It was an idle wish, however. Even if Sazed were in Luthadel, he wouldn't be her steward. The Terraceman no longer called any man master. She'd have to make do with Orsir. The Chandra, at least, could provide information that Sazed could not, assuming she could get it out of him.
We need to find the imposter, Vin said. The one who replaced someone.
Yes, mistress, Orsir said.
Vin sat back in the mists, reclining on a slanted rooftop, resting her arms back on the tiles.
Then I need to know more about you.
Me, mistress.
Chandra in general. If I'm going to find this imposter, I need to know how he thinks. Need to understand his motivations.
His motivations will be simple, mistress, Orsir said. He will be following his contract.
What if he's acting without a contract?
Orsir shook his canine head.
Chandra always have a contract. Without one, they are not allowed to enter human society.
Never? Vin asked.
Never.
And what if this is some kind of rogue Chandra? Vin said.
Such a thing does not exist, Orsir said firmly.
Oh, Vin thought skeptically.
However, she let the matter drop. There was little reason for a Chandra to infiltrate the palace on his own. It was far more likely that one of Ellen's enemies had sent the creature. One of the warlords, perhaps, or maybe the obligators. Even the other nobility in the city would have had good reason to spy on Ellen.
Okay, Vin said. The Chandra is a spy. Sent to gather information for another human.
Yes.
But, Vin said, if he did take the body of someone in the palace, he didn't kill them himself. Chandra can't kill humans, right?
Orsir nodded.
We are all bound by that rule.
So somebody snuck into the palace, murdered a member of the staff, then had their Chandra take the body.
She paused, trying to work through the problem.
The most dangerous possibilities, the crew members, should be considered first. Fortunately, since the killing happened yesterday, we can eliminate Breeze, who was outside the city at the time.
Orsir nodded.
We can eliminate Elland as well, Vin said. He was with us on the wall yesterday.
That still leaves the majority of the crew, mistress.
Vin frowned, sitting back. She'd tried to establish solid alibis for Ham, Doxson, Clubs, and Spook. However, all of them had had at least a few hours unaccounted for, long enough for a Chandra to digest them and take their place.
All right, she said. So how do I find the imposter? How can I tell him from other people?
Orsir sat quietly in the mists.
There has to be a way, Vin said. His imitation can't be perfect. Would cutting him work?
Orsir shook his head.
Chandra replicate a body perfectly, mistress. Blood, flesh, skin, and muscle. You have seen that when I split my skin.
Vin sighed, standing and stepping up on the tip of the peaked rooftop. The mists were already full, and the night was quickly becoming black. She began to walk idly back and forth on the ridge, an Allomancer's balance keeping her from falling.
Perhaps I can just see who isn't acting oddly, she said. Are most Chandra as good at imitation as you are?
Among Chandra, my own skill is average. Some are worse, others better.
But no actor is perfect, Vin said. Chandra don't often make mistakes, mistress, Orseer said. But this is probably your best method. Be warned, however. He could be anyone. My kind are very skilled.
Vin paused.
It's not Elend, she told herself forcibly. He was with me all day yesterday, except in the morning. Too long, she decided. We were on the wall for hours, and those bones were freshly expelled. Besides, I'd know if it were him, wouldn't I?
She shook her head.
There has to be another way. Can I spot a Chandra with Allomancy somehow?
Orseer didn't answer immediately. She turned toward him in the darkness, studying his canine face.
What? She asked.
These are not things we speak of with outsiders.
Vin sighed.
Tell me anyway.
Do you command me to speak?
I don't really care to command you in anything.
Then I may leave? Orseer asked. You do not wish to command me, so our contract is dissolved?
That isn't what I meant, Vin said.
Orseer frowned, a strange expression to see on a dog's face.
It would be easier for me if you would try to say what you mean, mistress.
Vin gritted her teeth.
Why is it you're so hostile?
I'm not hostile, mistress. I am your servant, and will do as you command. That is part of the contract.
Sure. Are you like this with all of your masters?
With most. I am fulfilling a specific role, Orseer said. I have bones to imitate, a person to become, a personality to adopt. You have given me no direction, just the bones of this animal.
So that's it, Vin thought, still annoyed by the dog's body. Look, those bones don't really change anything. You are still the same person.
You do not understand. It is not who a Chandra is that's important. It's who a Chandra becomes. The bones he takes, the role he fulfills. None of my previous masters have asked me to do something like this.
Well, I'm not like other masters, Vin said. Anyway, I asked you a question. Is there a way I can spot a Chandra with Allomancy? And yes, I command you to speak.
A flash of triumph shone in Orseer's eyes, as if he enjoyed forcing her into her role.
Chandra cannot be affected by mental Allomancy, mistress.
Vin frowned.
Not at all?
No, mistress, Orseer said. You can try to riot or soothe our emotions if you wish, but it will have no effect. We won't even know that you are trying to manipulate us.
Like someone who is burning copper.
That's not exactly the most useful bit of information, she said, strolling past the Chandra on the roof. Allomancers couldn't read minds or emotions. When they soothed or rioted another person, they simply had to hope that the person reacted as intended. She could test for a Chandra by soothing someone's emotions, perhaps. If they didn't react, that might mean they were a Chandra. But it could also just mean that they were good at containing their emotions. Orseer watched her pacing.
If it were easy to detect Chandra, mistress, then we wouldn't be worth much as imposters, would we?
I suppose not, Vin acknowledged. However, thinking about what he'd said made her consider something else. Can a Chandra use Allomancy? If they eat an Allomancer, I mean.
Orseer shook his head.
That's another method, then, Vin thought. If I catch a member of the crew burning metals, then I know he's not the Chandra. Wouldn't help with Doxin or the palace servants, but it would let her eliminate Ham and Spook.
There's something else, Vin said. Before, when we were doing the job with Kelsier, he said that we had to keep you away from the Lord Ruler and his Inquisitors. Why was that?
Orseer looked away.
This is not a thing we speak of.
Then I command you to speak of it.
Then I refuse to answer.
Refuse to answer? Vin asked. You can do that?
Orseer nodded.
We are not required to reveal secrets about Chandra nature, mistress. It is
in the contract, Vin finished, frowning. I really need to read that thing again.
Yes, mistress. I have perhaps said too much already.
Vin turned away from Orsir, looking out over the city. The mists continued to spin. Vin closed her eyes, questing out with bronze, trying to feel the telltale pulse of an allomancer burning metals nearby. Orsir rose and padded over beside her, then settled down on his haunches again, sitting on the inclined roof.
"Shouldn't you be at the meeting the king is having, mistress?"
"Perhaps later," Vin said, opening her eyes. Out beyond the city, watchfires from the armies lit the horizon. Keep Venture blazed in the night to her right, and inside of it, Elland was holding council with the others. Many of the most important men in the government, sitting together in one room. Elland would call her paranoid for insisting that she be the one who watched for spies and assassins. That was fine. He could call her whatever he wanted, as long as he stayed alive. She settled back down. She was glad Elland had decided to pick Keep Venture as his palace, rather than moving into Creedic Shaw, the Lord Ruler's home. Not only was Creedic Shaw too big to be properly defended, but it also reminded her of him, the Lord Ruler. She thought of the Lord Ruler often lately, or rather she thought of Rashik, the man who had become the Lord Ruler. A Terraceman by birth, Rashik had killed the man who should have taken the power at the Well of Ascension, and done what? They still didn't know. The hero had been on a quest to protect the people from a danger simply known as the Deepness. So much had been lost. So much had been intentionally destroyed. Their best source of information about those days came in the form of an aged journal, written by the Hero of Ages during the days before Rashik had killed him. However, it gave precious few clues about his quest.
"Why do I even worry about these things?" Vin thought. "The Deepness is a thing 1,000 years forgotten. Elland and the others are right to be concerned about more pressing events."
And still, Vin found herself strangely detached from them. Perhaps that was why she found herself scouting outside. It wasn't that she didn't worry about the armies. She just felt removed from the problem. Even now, as she considered the threat to Luthadel, her mind was drawn back to the Lord Ruler.
"You don't know what I do for mankind," he had said. "I was your god, even if you couldn't see it. By killing me, you have doomed yourselves."
Those were the Lord Ruler's last words, spoken as he lay dying on the floor of his own throne room. They worried her, chilled her, even still. She needed to distract herself.
"What kinds of things do you like, Chandra?" she asked, turning to the creature, who still sat on the rooftop beside her. "What are your loves, your hatreds?"
"I do not wish to answer that," Vin frowned.
"Do not want to, or do not have to?"
Orsir paused.
"Do not want to, mistress."
The implication was obvious.
"You're going to have to command me."
She almost did. However, something gave her pause, something in those eyes, inhuman though they were, something familiar. She'd known resentment like that. She'd felt it often during her youth, when she'd served crew leaders who had lorded over their followers. In the crews, one did what one was commanded, especially if one was a small waif of a girl without rank or means of intimidation.
"If you don't wish to speak of it," Vin said, turning away from the Chandra, "then I won't force you."
Orsir was silent. Vin breathed in the mist, its cool wetness tickling her throat and lungs.
"Do you know what I love, Chandra?"
"No, mistress."
"The mists," she said, holding out her arms. "The power. The freedom."
Orsir nodded slowly. Nearby, Vin felt a faint pulsing with her bronze. Quiet, strange,
unnerving. It was the same odd pulsing that she had felt atop Keep Venture a few nights before. She had never been brave enough to investigate it again.
"It's about time to do something about that," she decided. "Do you know what I hate, Chandra?" she whispered, falling to a crouch, checking her knives and medals.
"No, mistress."
She turned, meeting Osir's eyes.
"I hate being afraid."
She knew that others thought her jumpy, paranoid. She had lived with fear for so long that she had once seen it as something natural, like the ash, the sun, or the ground itself. Kelsier had taken that fear away. She was careful still, but she didn't feel a constant sense of terror. The survivor had given her a life where the ones she loved didn't beat her, had shown her something better than fear. Trust. Now that she knew of these things, she would not quickly surrender them. Not to armies, not to assassins. Not even to spirits.
"Follow if you can," she whispered, then dropped off the rooftop to the street below.
She dashed along the mist-slicked street, building momentum before she had time to lose her nerve. The source of the bronze pulses was close. It came from only one street over, in a building. Not the top, she decided. One of the darkened windows on the third floor, the shutters open. Vin dropped her coin and jumped into the air. She shot upward, angling herself by pushing against a latch across the street. She landed in the window's pit-like opening, arms grabbing the sides of the frame. She flared tin, letting her eyes adjust to the deep darkness within the abandoned room. And it was there. Formed entirely of mists, it shifted and spun, its outline vague in the dark chamber. It had a vantage to see the rooftop where Vin and Orsure had been talking.
"Ghosts don't spy on people, do they?"
Ska didn't speak of things like spirits or the dead. It smacked too much of religion, and religion was for the nobility. To worship was death for Ska. That hadn't stopped some, of course, but thieves like Vin had been too pragmatic for such things. There was only one thing in Ska lore that this creature matched. Mistwraiths. Creatures said to steal the souls of men foolish enough to go outside at night. But Vin now knew what mistwraiths were. They were cousins to the Chandra. Strange, semi-intelligent beasts who used the bones of those they ingested. They were odd, true, but hardly phantoms, and not really even that dangerous. There were no dark wraiths in the night, no haunting spirits or ghouls. Or so Kelsier had said. The thing standing in the dark room, its insubstantial form writhing in the mists, seemed a powerful counterexample. She gripped the sides of the window, fear, her old friend, returning.
"Run! Flee! Hide!"
"Why have you been watching me?" she demanded. The thing did not move. Its form seemed to draw the mists forward, and they spun slightly as if in an air current.
"I can sense it with bronze. That means it's using allomancy, and allomancy attracts the mist."
The thing stepped forward, then tensed. And then the spirit was gone. Vin paused, frowning.
"That was it?"
She had... Something grabbed her arm. Something cold, something terrible, but something very real. A pain shot through her head, moving as if from her ear and into her mind. She yelled, but cut off as her voice failed. With a quiet groan, her arm quivering and shaking, she fell backward out of the window. Her arm was still cold. She could feel it whipping in the air beside her, seeming to exude chill air. Mist passed like trailing clouds. Vin flared tin. Pain, cold, wetness, and lucidity burst into her mind, and she threw herself into a twist and flared pewter just as she hit the ground.
"Mistress," Osir said, darting from the shadows.
Vin shook her head, pushing herself up to her knees, her palms cool against the slick cobblestones. She could still feel the trailing chill in her left arm.
"Shall I go for aid?" the wolfhound asked.
Vin shook her head, forcing herself into a wobbling stand.
She looked upward, through swirling mists, toward the black window above. She shivered. Her shoulder was sore from where she had hit the ground, and her still-bruised side throbbed, but she could feel her strength returning. She stepped away from the building, still looking up. Above her, the deep mists seemed ominous, obscuring. "No," she thought forcefully. "The mists are my freedom. The night is my home. This is where I belong. I haven't needed to be afraid in the night since Kelsier taught me otherwise." She couldn't lose that. She wouldn't go back to the fear. Still, she couldn't help the quick urgency in her step as she waved to Orsier and scampered away from the building. She gave no explanation for her strange actions. He didn't ask for one. Elland set a third pile of books onto the table, and it slumped against the other two, threatening to topple the entire lot to the floor. He steadied them, then glanced up. Breeze, in a prim suit, regarded the table with amusement as he sipped his wine. Ham and Spook were playing a game of stones as they waited for the meeting to begin. Spook was winning. Dachshund sat in the corner of the room, scribbling on a ledger, and Clubs sat in a deep plush chair, eyeing Elland with one of his stares. "Any one of these men could be an impostor," Elland thought. The thought still seemed insane to him. What was he to do? Exclude them all from his confidence? No, he needed them too much. The only option was to act normally and watch them. Vin had told him to try and spot inconsistencies in their personalities. He intended to do his best, but the reality was he wasn't sure how much he would be able to see. This was more Vin's area of expertise. He needed to worry about the armies. Thinking of her, he glanced at the stained glass window at the back of the study, and was surprised to see it was dark. "That late already?" Elland thought. "My dear man," Breeze noted, "when you told us you needed to go and gather a few important references, you might have warned us that you were planning to be gone for 2 full hours. "Yes, well," Elland said, "I kind of lost track of time." "For 2 hours?" Elland nodded sheepishly. "There were books involved." Breeze shook his head. "If the fate of the Central Dominance weren't at stake, and if it weren't so fantastically enjoyable to watch Hammond lose an entire month's earnings to the boy there, I'd have left an hour ago." "Yes, well, we can get started now," Elland said. Ham chuckled, standing up. "Actually, it's kind of like the old days. Kel always arrived late, too. And he liked to hold his meetings at night. Mistborn hours." Spook smiled, his coin pouch bulging. "We still use boxings, Lord Ruler Imperials, as our coinage," Elland thought. "We'll have to do something about that." "I miss the charcoal board, though," Spook said. "I certainly don't," Breeze replied. "Kel had atrocious handwriting." "Absolutely atrocious," Ham said with a smile, sitting. "You have to admit, though, it was distinctive." Breeze raised an eyebrow. "It was that, I suppose." "Kelsier, the survivor of Hath-Sin," Ellen thought. "Even his handwriting is legendary." "Regardless," he said, "I think perhaps we should get to work. We've still got 2 armies waiting out there. We're not leaving tonight until we have a plan to deal with them." The crew members shared looks. "Actually, Your Majesty," Dachshund said, "we've already worked on that problem for a bit." "Oh?" Elland asked, surprised. "Well, I guess I did leave them alone for a couple of hours." "Let me hear it, then." Dachshund stood, pulling his chair a bit closer to join the rest of the group, and Ham began to speak.
"Here's the thing, El," Ham said. "With 2 armies here, we don't have to worry about an immediate attack. But we're still in serious danger. This will probably turn into an extended siege as each army tries to outlast the other."
"They'll try to starve us out," Club said.
weaken us and their enemies before attacking.
And, Ham continued, that puts us in a bind, because we can't last very long. The city is already on the edge of starvation, and the enemy kings are probably aware of that fact.
What are you saying? Elend asked slowly.
We have to make an alliance with one of those armies, Your Majesty, Doxson said. They both know it. Alone, they can't reliably defeat one another. With our help, however, the balance will be tipped.
They'll hem us in, Ham said. Keep us blockaded until we get desperate enough to side with one of them. Eventually, we'll have to do so. Either that or let our people starve.
The decision comes down to this, Breeze said. We can't outlast the others, so we have to choose which of those men we want to take over the city. And I would suggest making our decision quickly as opposed to waiting while our supplies run out.
Elend stood quietly.
By making a deal with one of those armies, we'll essentially be giving away our kingdom.
True, Breeze said, tapping the side of his cup. However, what I gained us by bringing a second army is bargaining power. You see, at least we are in a position to demand something in exchange for our kingdom.
What good is that? Elend asked. We still lose.
It's better than nothing, Breeze said. I think that we might be able to persuade Set to leave you as a provisional leader in Luthadel. He doesn't like the central dominance. He finds it barren and flat.
Provisional leader of the city, Elend said with a frown. That is somewhat different from king of the central dominance.
True, Doxson said. But every emperor needs good men to administrate the cities under their rule. You wouldn't be king, but you and our armies would live through the next few months, and Luthadel wouldn't be pillaged.
Ham, Breeze, and Doxson all sat resolutely, looking him in the eye. Elend glanced down at his pile of books, thinking of his research and study. Worthless. How long had the crew known that there was only one course of action? The crew seemed to take Elend's silence as assent.
Set really is the best choice, then? Doxson asked. Perhaps Straff would be more likely to make an agreement with Elend. They are, after all, family.
Oh, he'd make an agreement, Elend thought, and he'd break it the moment it was convenient. But the alternative? Give the city over to this Set? What would happen to this land, this people, if he were in charge?
Set is best, I think, Breeze said. He is very willing to let others rule, as long as he gets his glory and his coins. The problem is going to be that Atium. Set thinks it is here, and if he doesn't find it...
We just let him search the city, Ham said.
Breeze nodded.
You'd have to persuade him that I misled him about the Atium, and that shouldn't be too hard, considering what he thinks of me. Which is another small matter. You'll have to convince him that I've been dealt with. Perhaps he'd believe that I was executed as soon as Elend found out I had raised an army against him.
The others nodded.
Breeze, Elend asked, how does Lord Set treat the Ska and his lands?
Breeze paused, then glanced away.
Not well, I'm afraid.
Now see, Elend said, I think we need to consider how to best protect our people. I mean, if we give everything over to Set, then we'd save my skin, but at the cost of the entire Ska population of the Dominance.
Doxson shook his head.
Elend, it's not a betrayal. Not if this is the only way.
That's easy to say, Elend said. But I'm the one who'd have to bear the guilty conscience for doing such a thing. I'm not saying that we should throw out your suggestion, but I do have a few ideas that we might talk about.
The others shared looks. As usual, Clubs and Spook remained quiet during the proceedings. Clubs only spoke when he felt it absolutely necessary, and Spook tended to stay on the periphery of the conversations. Finally, Breeze, Ham, and Doxson looked back at Elend.
This is your country, Your Majesty, Doxson said carefully. We're simply here to give advice.
Very good advice, his tone implied. Yes, well, Ellen said, quickly selecting a book. In his haste, he knocked over one of the stacks, sending a clatter of books across the table and landing a volume in Breeze's lap. Sorry, Ellen said, as Breeze rolled his eyes and sat the book back up on the table. Ellen pulled open his own book. Now, this volume had some very interesting things to say about the movement and arrangement of troop bodies.
L? Ham asked, frowning. That looks like a book on shipping grain.
I know, Ellen said. There weren't a lot of books about warfare in the library. I guess that's what we get for 1,000 years without any wars. However, this book does mention how much grain it took to keep the various garrisons in the final empire stocked. Do you have any idea how much food an army needs?
You have a point, Club said, nodding. Usually it's a blasted pain to keep soldiers fed. We often had supply problems fighting on the frontier, and we were only small bands sent to quell the occasional rebellion.
Ellen nodded. Clubs didn't often speak of his past fighting in the Lord Ruler's army, and the crew didn't often ask him about it. Anyway, Ellen said, I'll bet both Set and my father are unaccustomed to moving large bodies of men. There will be supply problems, especially for Set, since he marched so hastily.
Maybe not, Club said. Both armies have secured canal routes into Luthadel. That will make it easy for them to send for more supplies.
Plus, Breeze added, though much of Set's land is in revolt right now, he does still hold the city of Haverfrex, which held one of the Lord Ruler's main canneries. Set has a remarkable amount of food a short canal trip away.
Then we disrupt the canals, Ellen said. We find a way to stop those supplies from coming. Canals make resupply quick, but also vulnerable, since we know exactly which route it will take. And if we can take away their food, perhaps they'll be forced to turn around and march home.
Either that, Breeze said, or they'll just decide to risk attacking Luthadel. Ellen paused.
That's a possibility, he said.
But, well, I've been researching on how to hold the city as well. He reached across the table, picking up a book. Now, this is Jendala's City Management in the Modern Era. He mentions how difficult Luthadel is to police because of its extreme size and large number of ska slums. He suggests using roving bands of city watchmen. I think we could adapt his methods to use in a battle. Our wall is too long to defend in detail, but if we had mobile bands of troops that could respond to...
Your Majesty, Doxon interrupted.
Hmm? Yes?
We've got a troop of boys and men who have barely a year's training, and we're facing not one overwhelming force, but two. We can't win this battle by force.
Oh, yes, Ellen said, of course. I was just saying that if we did have to fight, I have some strategies.
If we fight, we lose, Club said. We'll probably lose anyway.
Ellen paused for a moment.
Yes. Well, I just...
Attacking the canal routes is a good idea, though, Doxon said. We can do that covertly. Perhaps hire some of the bandits in the area to attack supply barges. It probably won't be enough to send Set or Straff home, but we could make them more desperate to make alliances with us.
Breeze nodded. Set's already worried about instability back in his home dominance. We should send him a preliminary messenger, let him know we're interested in an alliance. That way, as soon as his supply problems begin, he'll think of us.
We could even send him a letter explaining Breeze's execution, Doxon said, as a sign of good faith. That...
Ellen cleared his throat. The others paused.
I wasn't finished yet, Ellen said.
I apologize, Your Majesty, Doxon said.
Ellen took a deep breath.
You're right. We can't afford to fight those armies. But I think we need to find a way to get them to fight each other.
A pleasant sentiment, my dear man, Breeze said. But getting those two to attack one another isn't as simple as persuading Spook over there to refill my wine.
He turned, holding out his empty cup. Spook paused, then sighed, rising to fetch the wine bottle.
Well, yes, Elland said. But while there aren't a lot of books on warfare, there are a lot about politics. Breeze, you said the other day that being the weakest party in a three-way stalemate gives us power.
Exactly, Breeze said. We can tip the battle for either of the two larger sides.
Yes, Elland said, opening a book. Now that there are three parties involved, it's not warfare, it's politics. This is just like a contest between houses. And in house politicking, even the most powerful houses can't stand without allies. The small houses are weak individually, but they are strong when considered as a group. We're like one of those small houses. If we want to make any gains, we're going to have to get our enemies to forget about us, or at least make them think us inconsequential. If they both assume that they have the better of us, that they can use us to defeat the other army, then turn on us at their leisure, then they'll leave us alone and concentrate on each other. Ham rubbed his chin.
You're talking about playing both sides, Elland. It's a dangerous position to put ourselves in.
Breeze nodded.
We'd have to switch our allegiance to whichever side seems weaker at the moment, keeping them snapping at each other. And there's no guarantee that the winner between the two would be weakened enough for us to defeat.
Not to mention our food problems, Doxson said. What you propose would take time, Your Majesty. Time during which we'd be under siege, our supplies dwindling. It's autumn right now. Winter will soon be upon us.
It will be tough, Elland agreed, and risky. But I think we can do it. We make them both think we're allied with them, but we hold back our support. We encourage them against one another, and we wear away at their supplies and morale, pushing them into a conflict. When the dust settles, the surviving army might just be weak enough for us to beat.
Breeze looked thoughtful.
It has style, he admitted, and it does kind of sound fun.
Doxson smiled.
You only say that because it involves making someone else do our work for us.
Breeze shrugged.
Manipulation works so well on a personal level, I don't see why it wouldn't be an equally viable national policy.
That's exactly how most rulership works, Ham mused. What is a government but an institutionalized method of making sure somebody else does all the work?
The plan? Elland asked.
I don't know, El, Ham said, getting back on topic. It sounds like one of Kel's plans. Foolhardy, brave, and a little insane.
He sounded as if he were surprised to hear Elland propose such a measure.
I can be as foolhardy as any man, Elland thought indignantly, then paused.
Did he really want to follow that line of thought?
We could get ourselves into some serious trouble, Doxson said. If either side decides it's tired of our games,
they'll destroy us, Elland said.
But, well, gentlemen, you're gamblers. You can't tell me that this plan doesn't appeal to you more than simply bowing before Lord Set.
Ham shared a look with Breeze, and they seemed to be considering the idea. Doxson rolled his eyes, but seemed like he was objecting simply out of habit. No, they didn't want to take the safe way out. These were the men who had challenged the Lord Ruler, men who had made their livelihood scamming noblemen. In some ways, they were very careful. They could be precise in their attention to detail, cautious in covering their tracks and protecting their interests. But when it came time to gamble for the big prize, they were often willing. No, not willing. Eager. Great, Elland thought. I filled my inner council with a bunch of thrill-seeking masochists. Even worse, I've just decided to join them. But what else could he do?
We could at least consider it, Breeze said. It does sound exciting.
Now see, I didn't suggest this because it was exciting, Breeze, Elland said. I spent my youth trying to plan how I would make a better city of Luthadel once I became leader of my house. I'm not going to throw away those dreams at the first sign of opposition.
What about the assembly? Ham said.
That's the best part, Elland said. They voted in my proposal at the meeting 2 days back. They can't open the city gates to any invader until I meet with my father in Parley.
The crew sat quietly for a few moments. Finally, Ham turned to Elland, shaking his head.
"I really don't know, El. It sounds appealing. We actually discussed a few more daring plans like this when we were waiting for you. But..."
"But what?" Elland asked.
"A plan like this depends a lot on you, my dear man," Breeze said, sipping his wine. "You'd have to be the one to meet with the kings, the one to persuade them both that we're on their side. No offense, but you're new to scamming. It's difficult to agree to a daring plan that puts a newcomer in as the linchpin member of the team."
"I can do this," Elland said. "Really?" Ham glanced at Breeze, then both glanced at Clubs. The gnarled general shrugged.
"If the kid wants to try it, then let him."
Ham sighed, then looked back.
"I guess I agree. As long as you're up to this, El."
"I think I am," Elland said, covering his nervousness. "I just know we can't give up. Not easily. Maybe this won't work. Maybe after a couple months of being besieged, we'll just end up giving away the city anyway. However, that gives us a couple months during which something could happen. It's worth the risk to wait, rather than fold. Wait and plan."
"All right, then," Doxson said. "Give us some time to come up with some ideas and options, Your Majesty. We'll meet again in a few days to talk about specifics."
"All right," Elland said. "Sounds good. Now if we can move on to other matters, I'd like to mention..."
A knock came at the door. At Ellen's call, Captain Demu pushed open the door, looking a little embarrassed.
"Your Majesty," he said. "I apologize, but I think we caught someone listening in on your meeting."
"What?" Elland said. "Who?"
Demu turned to the side, waving in a pair of his guards. The woman they led into the room was vaguely familiar to Elland. Tall, like most Terrace, she wore a bright-colored but utilitarian dress. Her ears were stretched downward, the lobes elongated to accommodate numerous earrings.
"I recognize you," Elland said, "from the assembly hall a few days ago. You were watching me."
The woman didn't answer. She looked over the room's occupants, standing stiffly, even haughtily, despite her bound wrists. Elland had never actually met a Terrace woman before. He'd only met stewards, eunuchs trained from birth to work as manservants. For some reason, Elland had expected a Terrace woman to seem a bit more servile.
"She was hiding in the next room over," Demu said. "I am sorry, Your Majesty. I don't know how she got past us. We found her listening against the wall, though I doubt she heard anything. I mean, those walls are made of stone."
Elland met the woman's eyes. Older, perhaps 50, she wasn't beautiful, but neither was she homely. She was sturdy, with a straightforward rectangular face. Her stare was calm and firm, and it made Elland uncomfortable to hold it for long.
"So what did you expect to overhear, woman?" Elland asked.
The Terrace woman ignored the comment. She turned to the others and spoke in a lightly accented voice.
"I would speak with the king alone. The rest of you are excused."
Ham smiled.
"Well, at least she's got nerve."
Doxson addressed the Terrace woman.
"What makes you think that we would leave our king alone with you?"
"His Majesty and I have things to discuss,"
the woman said in a businesslike manner, as if oblivious of or unconcerned about her status as a prisoner.
"You needn't be worried about his safety. I am certain that the young Mistborn hiding outside the window will be more than enough to deal with me."
Elland glanced to the side, toward the small ventilation window beside the more massive stained glass one. How would the Terrace woman have known that Vin was watching? Her ears would have to be extraordinarily keen. Keen enough, perhaps, to listen in on the meeting through a stone wall? Elland turned back to the newcomer.
"You're a keeper," she nodded. "Did Sazed send you?"
"It is because of him that I am here," she said. "But I was not sent."
Ham, it's all right, Elend said slowly. You can go.
Are you sure? Ham asked, frowning.
Leave me bound, if you wish, the woman said.
If she really is a ferrochemist, that won't be much of a hindrance, Elend thought. Of course, if she really is a ferrochemist, a keeper, like Sazed, I shouldn't have anything to fear from her. Theoretically. The others shuffled from the room, their postures indicating what they thought of Ellen's decision. Though they were no longer thieves by profession, Ellen suspected that they, like Vin, would always bear the effects of their upbringing.
"We'll be just outside, El,"
Ham, the last one out, said, then pulled the door shut.
"And yet, any who know me will realize that there was no chance I would give up so easily. Once I find something to investigate, I become dogged in my pursuit."
14. The terrace woman snapped her bonds and the ropes dropped to the floor.
Vin? Elend said, beginning to wonder about the logic of meeting with this woman. "Perhaps it's time you came in."
"She's not actually there," the terrace woman said offhandedly, walking forward. "She left a few minutes ago to do her rounds. That is why I let myself be caught."
I see," Elend said. "I'll be calling for the guards now."
"Don't be a fool," the terrace woman said. "If I wanted to kill you, I could do it before the others got back in. Now be quiet for a moment."
Elend stood uncomfortably as the tall woman walked around the table in a slow circle, studying him as a merchant might inspect a piece of furniture up for auction. Finally she stopped, placing her hands on her hips.
"Stand up straight," she commanded.
"Excuse me?"
"You're slouching," the woman said. "A king must maintain an air of dignity at all times, even with his friends."
Ellen frowned. "Now, while I appreciate advice, I don't..."
"No," the woman said. "Don't hedge. Command."
"Excuse me?" Ellen said again. The woman stepped forward, placing a hand on his shoulder and pressing his back firmly to improve his posture. She stepped back, then nodded slightly to herself.
"Now see," Ellen said, "I don't..."
"No," the woman interrupted.
"You must be stronger in the way that you speak. Presentation, words, actions, postures, will determine how people judge you and react to you. If you start every sentence with softness and uncertainty, you will seem soft and uncertain. Be forceful."
"What is going on here?" Ellen demanded, exasperated.
"There," the woman said. "Finally."
"You said that you know Sazed," Elend asked, resisting the urge to slouch back into his earlier posture.
"He is an acquaintance," the woman said. "My name is Tyndall. I am, as you have guessed, a keeper of Terrace."
She tapped her foot for a moment, then shook her head.
"Sazed warned me about your slovenly appearance, but I honestly assumed that no king could have such a poor sense of self-presentation."
"Slovenly?" Elend asked. "Excuse me?"
"Stop saying that," Tyndall snapped. "Don't ask questions. Say what you mean. If you object, object. Don't leave your words up to my interpretation."
"Yes, well, while this is fascinating," Elend said, walking toward the door, "I'd rather avoid further insults this evening. If you'll excuse me..."
"Your people think you are a fool, Elend Venture," Tyndall said quietly.
Elend paused.
"The Assembly, a body you yourself organized, ignores your authority. The Ska are convinced that you won't be able to protect them. Even your own Council of Friends makes their plans in your absence, assuming your input to be no great loss."
Elend closed his eyes, taking a slow, deep breath.
"You have good ideas, Elend Venture," Tyndall said. "Regal ideas. However, you are not a king. A man can only lead when others accept him as their leader, and he has only as much authority as his subjects give to him. All of the brilliant ideas in the world cannot save your kingdom if no one will listen to them."
Elend turned. "This last year I've read every pertinent book on leadership and governance in the 4 libraries." Tyndall raised an eyebrow.
"Then I suspect that you spent a great deal of time in your room that you should have been out, being seen by your people, and learning to be a ruler."
"Books have great value," Elend said.
"Actions have greater value."
"And where am I to learn the proper actions?"
"From me."
Elend paused.
"You may know that every keeper has an area of special interest," Tyndall said. "While we all memorize the same store of information, one person can only study and understand a limited amount of that store. Our mutual friend Sazed spends his time on religions."
"And your specialty?"
"Biographies," she said. "I have studied the lives of generals, kings, and emperors, whose names you have never heard. Understanding theories of politics and leadership, Elend Venture, is not the same as understanding the lives of men who lived such principles."
"And you can teach me to emulate those men?"
"Perhaps," Tyndall said. "I haven't yet decided whether or not you're a hopeless case. But I am here, so I will learn what I can. A few months ago I received a letter from Sazed, explaining your predicament. He did not ask me to come to train you. But then, Sazed is perhaps another man who could learn to be more forceful."
Elend nodded slowly, meeting the terrace woman's eyes.
"Will you accept my instruction, then?" she asked.
Elend thought for a moment. "If she's anywhere near as useful as Sazed, then, well, I could certainly use some help at this."
"I will," he said.
Tyndall nodded.
"Sazed also mentioned your humility. It could be an asset, assuming you don't let it get in the way. Now, I believe that your Mistborn has returned."
Elend turned toward the side window. The shutter swung open, allowing mist to begin streaming into the room and revealing a crouching, cloaked form.
"How did you know I was here?"
Vin asked quietly. Tyndall smiled, the first such expression Elend had seen on her face.
"Sazed mentioned you as well, child. You and I should speak soon, in private, I think."
Vin slipped into the room, drawing mist in behind her, then closed the shutter. She didn't bother to hide her hostility or mistrust as she put herself between Elend and Tyndall.
"Why are you here?" Vin demanded.
Tyndall smiled again.
"It took your king there several minutes to get to that question, and here you ask it after a few bare moments. You are an interesting couple, I think."
Vin's eyes narrowed.
"Regardless, I should withdraw," Tyndall said. "We shall speak again, I assume, Your Majesty?"
"Yes, of course," Elend said. Is there anything I should begin practicing?"
"Yes,"
Tyndall said, walking to the door.
"Stop saying,
"Right." Ham poked his head in the door as soon as Tyndall opened it. He immediately noticed her discarded bonds. He didn't say anything, however. He likely assumed that Elend had freed her.
"I think we're done for the night, everyone," Elend said. "Ham, would you see that Mistress Tyndall is given quarters in the palace? She's a friend of Sazed's."
Ham shrugged.
"All right, then."
He nodded to Vin, then withdrew. Tyndall did not bid them good night as she left. Vin frowned, then glanced at Elend. He seemed distracted.
"I don't like her," she said.
Elend smiled, stacking up the books on his table.
"You don't like anyone when you first meet them, Vin."
"I liked you."
thereby demonstrating that you are a terrible judge of character. Vin paused, then smiled. She walked over and began picking through the books. They weren't typical Elend fare, far more practical than the kinds of things he usually read.
"How did it go tonight?" she asked. "I didn't have much time to listen."
Elend sighed. He turned, sitting down on the table, looking up at the massive rose window at the back of the room. It was dark, its colors only hinted as reflections in the black glass.
"It went well, I suppose."
"I told you they'd like your plan. It's the sort of thing they'll find challenging."
"I suppose," Elend said.
Vin frowned.
"All right," she said, hopping up to stand on the table. She sat down beside him. "What is it? Is it something that woman said? What did she want, anyway?"
"Just to pass on some knowledge," he said. "You know how keepers are, always wanting an ear to listen to their lessons."
"I suppose," Vin said slowly. She hadn't ever seen Elend depressed, but he did get discouraged. He had so many ideas, so many plans and hopes, that she sometimes wondered how he kept them all straight. She would have said that he lacked focus. Renard always said that focus kept a thief alive. Elend's dreams, however, were so much a part of who he was. She doubted he could discard them. She didn't think she would want him to, for they were part of what she loved about him.
"They agreed to the plan, Vin," Elend said, still looking up at the window. "They even seemed excited, like you said they'd be. It's just, I can't help thinking that their suggestion was far more rational than mine. They wanted to side with one of the armies, giving it our support in exchange for leaving me as a subjugated ruler in Luthadel."
"That would be giving up," Vin said.
"Sometimes giving up is better than failing. I just committed my city to an extended siege. That will mean hunger, perhaps starvation, before this is over with."
Vin put a hand on his shoulder, watching him uncertainly. Usually, he was the one who reassured her.
"It's still a better way," she said. "The others probably just suggested a weaker plan because they thought you wouldn't go along with something more daring."
"No," Elend said. "They weren't pandering to me, Vin. They really thought that making a strategic alliance was a good, safe plan."
He paused, then looked at her.
"Since when did that group represent the reasonable side of my government?"
"They've had to grow," Vin said. "They can't be the men they once were. Not with this much responsibility."
Elend turned back toward the window.
"I'll tell you what worries me, Vin. I'm worried that their plan wasn't reasonable. Perhaps it itself was a bit foolhardy. Perhaps making an alliance would have been a difficult enough task. If that's the case, then what I'm proposing is just downright ludicrous."
Vin squeezed his shoulder.
"We fought the Lord Ruler."
"You had Kelsier then."
"Not that again."
"I'm sorry," Elend said. "But really, Vin, maybe my plan to try and hold on to the government is just arrogance. What was it you told me about your childhood? When you were in the thieving crews and everyone was bigger, stronger, and meaner than you, what did you do? Did you stand up to the leaders?"
Memories flashed in her mind. Memories of hiding, of keeping her eyes down, of weakness.
"That was then," she said. "You can't let others beat on you forever. That's what Kelsier taught me. That's why we fought the Lord Ruler. That's why the Ska Rebellion fought the Final Empire all those years, even when there was no chance of winning. Rhaen taught me that the rebels were fools. But Rhaen is dead now. And so is the Final Empire. And..."
She leaned down, catching Elend's eyes.
"You can't give up the city, Elend," she said quietly. "I don't think I'd like what that would do to you."
Elend paused, then smiled slowly.
"You can be very wise sometimes, Vin."
"You think that?"
He nodded.
"Well," she said, "then obviously you're as poor a judge of character as I am."
Elend laughed, putting his arm around her, hugging her against his side.
"So I assume the patrol tonight was uneventful?"
The Mist Spirit, her fall, the chill she could still feel, if only faintly remembered, in her forearm.
"It was," she said.
The last time she'd told him of the mist spirit, he'd immediately thought she'd been seeing things.
"See," Ellen said, "you should have come to the meeting. I would have liked to have had you here."
She said nothing. They sat for a few minutes, looking up at the dark window. There was an odd beauty to it. The colors weren't visible because of the lack of backlight, and she could instead focus on the patterns of glass. Chips, slivers, slices, and plates, woven together within a framework of metal.
"Ellen," she finally said, "I'm worried."
"I'd be concerned if you weren't," he said. "Those armies have me so worried that I can barely think straight."
"No," Vin said, "not about that. I'm worried about other things."
"Like what?"
"Well, I've been thinking about what the Lord Ruler said right before I killed him. Do you remember?"
Ellen nodded. He hadn't been there, but she'd told him.
"He talked about what he'd done for mankind," Vin said. "He saved us, the stories say, from the deepness."
Ellen nodded.
"But," Vin said, "what was the deepness? You were a nobleman. Religion wasn't forbidden to you. What did the ministry teach about the deepness and the Lord Ruler?"
Ellen shrugged. "Not much, really. Religion wasn't forbidden, but it wasn't encouraged either. There was something proprietary about the ministry, an air that implied they would take care of religious things, that we didn't need to worry ourselves."
"But they did teach you about some things, right?"
Ellen nodded.
"Mostly they talked about why the nobility were privileged and the Ska cursed. I guess they wanted us to understand how fortunate we were, though honestly I always found the teachings a little disturbing."